This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 24th of October 2025. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 24th of October. Your readers today are Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
Heather Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
And Hilary Parsons.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Steve Russell. The main headlines this week are: number one, call for elections to go ahead promise, crowds gather for glimpse of statue, and a record number join charity run.
Call for elections go ahead promise. Hampshire's Liberal Democrat MPs have called for a promise that local elections will go ahead as planned. The elections, which were initially postponed until May 2026, could be cancelled again if the government heeds requests from Conservative councils, as reported by The Times. This would mean that councillors elected in 2021 would remain in office until 2027, serving two additional years without a renewed democratic mandate. The Hampshire Members of Parliament have urged both ministers and Hampshire County Council to make a basic democratic promise that elections will go ahead. They believe that cancelling elections again would show that the Conservatives and Labour are cancelling the elections again will only confirm that the Tories and Labour are running scared of voters in Hampshire. Danny Chambers, Liberal Democrat MP for Winchester, said, "Well, there's absolutely no justification to delay these elections for yet another year, just to please Conservative-led councils afraid to lose their power. That's not how we do things in a democracy." He added that only when there are guarantees that these elections will go ahead without further delay will there be a democratic mandate for key decisions about the future of local government to be made. Hampshire's Police and Crime Commissioner Donna Jones has also expressed serious concern about the potential postponement of local elections, saying, "A second delay to local elections would be completely unacceptable. Residents have a right to choose who represents them. And the cost of the local elections is being cited as the reason to delay. And the question is, what value do you put on democracy?" The message this sends and the worrying trend of taking away people's voice is wholly unacceptable. Ms. Jones welcomed confirmation from the leader of Hampshire County Council, Councillor Nick Adams-King, that he has not and will not ask for a postponement. In February 2025, the government postponed local elections in nine areas that are part of the devolution priority programme, including Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. The decision was enacted through secondary legislation laid before Parliament on February the 11th by the then Minister of State for Local Government and English Devolution, Jim McMahon, Member of Parliament.
Crowds gather for a glimpse of the statue of Jane Austen. A celebration of Jane Austen's legacy was held in Winchester as a life-size statue was unveiled in the grounds of the cathedral to mark the 250th anniversary of her birth. On Thursday, October 16th, hundreds gathered for the unveiling honouring Austen, whose final resting place lies within the cathedral. The event began with a service in the cathedral reflecting on the author's life by combining readings, music, reflection and worship, creating a moving and uplifting tribute. The Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, Nigel Atkinson, performed the official unveiling, while actors Joanna Davies, Susanna Harker and Adrian Lucas, famed for their roles in the BBC's 1995 adaptation of Pride and Prejudice, brought Austen's words to life with dramatic readings that stirred the audience. The statue, crafted by sculptor Martin Jennings, now stands in the inner close near number 9, depicting Austen beside her writing table in Chawton House, dressed in period attire and with her signature ringlets and cap. Previous to the unveiling, Mr. Jennings spoke about the work that had been put into the statue since its original proposal in 2016, and the challenges he faced when trying to create an accurate representation reflective of the little recorded information. He said, "It was really baffling how to do this because we base what little we know of what she looked like on a very brief sketch by her sister Cassandra. All other portraits were contested. I think the scale of is just about right with the beautiful offices behind, and I like her placing in front of a building of the period with so many domestic dramas she has given us." Jane said herself that her writing was like a little piece of ivory on which I work with so fine a brush. This suggests to us what great work worlds can come from such little beginnings. This is my own personal interpretation, but everyone has their own Jane Austen, and it's all part of her genius to have achieved that. The event was not just a tribute to Austen's literary genius, but a celebration of her enduring influence. Cultural historian Professor Michael Wheeler spoke passionately about Austen's moral vision and the timeless relevance of her novels. He said, "Our beloved Jane Austen was a surprise novelist, a supreme novelist, who wise moralist and Hampshire woman. I think Jane Austen would have been surprised and amused that in a building of Saxons and bishops and important figures laid to rest, it's Jane's grave that is most frequently visited. I think she would also be surprised and amused that we have come together with a memorial statue of her." Attendees expressed deep appreciation for the statue's lifelike portrayal. Standing at 1.1 times life size, the sculpture was destined to reflect Austen's stature and presence, offering a real connection to the woman behind the novels. Attendee David Target of Whichester said, "It's wonderful, and just how Martin explained. We look forward to it being there for well beyond our lives. There is definitely some majesty attached to it, and there's a great attention to details." Another attendee, Cheryl Macy, said, "She looks noble and her demeanour is spot on. She was a figurehead for feminism and fighting against the classes, which we are still doing today. It's a really beautiful representation and a wonderful piece of art."
Record number joined Charity Run. Nearly 80 tractors came together for a run through Hampshire to raise thousands for charity. On Saturday the 18th of October, South East Hampshire Young Farmers Club hosted a tractor run to support Diabetes UK. Starting off at Stroudwood Farm, Winchester Road, Upham at 9:30, the tractors travelled through Bishop's Waltham, Wickham, Droxford and finished just before 2 at Caffeine and Machine, the hut just off the A32. Having smashed their online goal of £1,000, the key organisers were hoping to have raised nearly £4,000 from donations and tractor entries. Jake Gosney, 24, said, "This is my first year organising the tractor run. The guy who used to do it, Tom, was so organised and I had big shoes to fill. It's been really good. There were lots of people in Bishop's Waltham and all the villages. It's been a record year for tractors, we think. Around 80 in the run this year. It's such an important charity. We have members who have diabetes, so it's good to raise some good money." Agricultural engineer and fellow organiser Luke Plamer, 24, said, "I am proud of everyone for how they have turned up. It is a big team effort, really. We're just a small part of that. We need about 15 to 20 people to help organise it through the villages." Denmead farmer Michael Speedy Bailey has been taking part in the tractor run for years. He said, "I remember when there were just 13 tractors. Now look at how many we've got. It's amazing. I love it. It's a brilliant day and it feels good to raise money for a good cause. We have a club member who has diabetes and they collapsed. They recovered, thankfully, but it does make you think. It is a serious illness." For Curtis Allenby, the tractor run was his first proper drive. He said, "There were so many people, it was really good. It's really amazing how many people turn out." Software developer James Lakin, who sat as a passenger throughout the run, added, "You do feel a bit like a celebrity. With the amount of waving too, it's like being the king. Our arms are hurting a bit. The event was sponsored by Crawford's, Rob Gaskin Limited, C&O, Hampshire Oil and Grease, J&ST Gregory, Tangler Blondes, Apex, Merrington's Garage and West Point Farm Vets.
And that concludes the headlines. And now we continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, Chronicle comment, and first person and Belgarum. Right, now for the death notices. Batty. Collier André Martin Batty died at home, 8th of October, aged 86. Powell Angela Nee Partridge passed away on the 28th of October, 2020. Well, this is a in memoriam. Dowsett Krista Eva Maria, 5th of October, 2025, 94 years. Highfield Peter passed away 3rd of October, 2025. Knowles Margaret Ann passed away on the 1st of October, 2025, aged 78. Lanny Attilio, Tony passed away on the 6th of October, 2025, aged 89. Mins Albert Victor Albie Mins passed away at age 86 on the 8th of October. Seeley Eric John passed away on the 11th of October, age 91. Wells Audrey Gwendolyn Betty, late of Allsford, passed away on the 4th of October, age 89. And Phyllis Wyatt passed away on the 2nd of October, age 83. That concludes the death notices. We shall now go on to Christian comment.
Moira Redmond writes, Churches Embracing the Digital Age. Lockdown 2021. I was spending time with my 94-year-old mother, and one weekday at midday I said to her, we can have Mass from St. Peter's, shall I set it up? Fetched the laptop to access the live stream. We started watching it together, and then she metaphorically sat up. But that's Father Tom, she said. I thought she was surprised because he was a retired priest. Well, yes, I said. He's helping out because of COVID. Oh, it's St. Peter's in Winchester, she said with delight. I thought you meant St. Peter's in Rome. And she became much more enthusiastic about it, started paying more attention. I do hope the late Pope Francis won't feel have had his feelings hurt, not being able to compete with our parish in Winchester. It sometimes seems religion and church don't change at all. That's some people's complaint, that the ideas and rules are out of date and haven't moved on enough. But churches have certainly tried to adapt to new technology with great enthusiasm, always hoping to reach more people by all means possible. Many churches live stream their services so that anyone can watch. We started live streaming from St. Peter's, that is Winchester, not Rome, 2 days before lockdown started. We patched together a very rough and ready, rather rickety system once we knew the church must close. Huge numbers of people watched during the next year or two from all over the world. It was rewarding and heartwarming with two-way communication, interaction, communal chat after Mass. We were told by many people that it was an important lifeline for them, and there were families divided by the pandemic who were helped by the idea that they could all attend the same Mass wherever they were. One lady in the Philippines would tell us each week that she was watching with Troy. I assumed that was her husband, but eventually she sent me a photograph and I realised it was her dog. Good for them. The system has been much improved since then, though not perfect. There are occasional glitches. And of course, we continued once lockdown was over. And although numbers are much smaller, it is still a lifeline for people who are housebound or far from home. Some church meetings can be held on Zoom now, and most religious organisations have a social media presence. There are numerous apps available. Pray As You Go and Bible in a Year have self-explanatory titles. The website Universalis tells us the church readings every day, and there are many Bible sites that offer the text, different translations, and helpful commentary. I thought of all this after reading this week that in Brazil, millions of people tune into a dawn prayer session on YouTube every day. It goes out live at 4 a.m. There's obviously a great sense of community and love among those sharing their early morning prayers. Embracing the digital age has the huge benefit of welcoming everyone. We want to be as inclusive as possible, enabling everyone to be part of what is going on in our churches. So many new ways to share our religious moments.
Right, editorial comment. New statue is a proud moment for the city. Winchester has a new resident, and she's already turning heads. The unveiling of a life-size statue of Jane Austen in the grounds of Winchester Cathedral is a moment of pride for our city. Yes, there's been debate. Some questioned how she should look, whether she should be placed, and whether the money, an estimated £100,000, could be better spent elsewhere. But standing in the tranquil inner close, Austen looks every bit the literary icon she is. The statue is a beautiful addition to the city and a fitting tribute to a woman whose words have shaped generations. It is more than just a tribute to a beloved author. It's also a celebration of our city's rich cultural heritage and a reminder of the enduring power of literature. Marking the 250th anniversary of Austen's birth in Steventon, the statue depicts standing at her writing table, hiding her work as if someone has just come into the room. It's a thoughtful piece that captures the quiet strength and creativity of one of England's greatest writers. We are incredibly fortunate to have Martin Jennings as a sculptor. His work is internationally recognised, from the Charles Dickens statue in Portsmouth to the first crowned portrait of King Charles III for the Royal Mint. Most notably, he has been selected to create the official statue of Her Late Majesty Queen Elizabeth II. To have an artist of such calibre contribute to Winchester is an honour. Austen's grave in the cathedral has long drawn literary pilgrims from around the world. Now, with this new sculpture, we offer a more complete tribute, one that brings her presence to life and invites reflection on her legacy. The statue stands not just as a memorial, but as a symbol of creativity and the importance of storytelling. Whether you like how she looks or not, Winchester should be proud. This is a city that values its history, invests in its culture, and understands the importance of celebrating those who shaped our world. Jane Austen looks good here, and Winchester looks better for having her.
A Direct Attack on Right to Know by Kimberly Barber. As editor of the Hampshire Chronicle, I've spent years championing the vital role local journalism plays in keeping our communities informed, connected and empowered. That's why I'm deeply concerned by government proposals that threaten to strip away one of the most fundamental pillars of public transparency. Ministers have launched a consultation on licensing reform that includes a proposal to scrap the legal requirement for alcohol licensing notices to be published in printed local newspapers. If this goes ahead, it would mean that plans to open a new pub or nightclub in Winchester, or for an existing venue to change its opening hours, would no longer be publicised in the pages of the Chronicle or other trusted local titles. This isn't just a technical change, it's a direct attack on the public's right to know. The licensing task force behind this proposal was made up almost entirely of representatives from the hospitality and nighttime industries. Crucially, there was no representation from the media, those of us who actually serve the communities affected by these decisions. At the same time, the English Devolution and Community Empowerment Bill threatens to remove the requirement for notices about changes to local authority governance arrangements to be published in local papers. This comes just as the government embarks on the most dramatic reform of local government in half a century. If these changes go ahead, communities across Hampshire could be left in the dark about sweeping changes to how their councils operate. Local news media, both in print and online, provides a trusted, independent platform for public notices. Our journalists don't just print these notices, we report on them, explain them, and hold decision makers to account. The industry's public notice portal, developed with support from Google, has expanded the reach of notices online. But the print requirement remains essential for those who can't, or choose not to, access digital platforms. Removing these notices from print would undermine that work and leave communities shrouded in secrecy. As Danny Camiade, chairman of the News Media Association, rightly said, ministers must change course and abandon this misguided plan. Let's not forget that around 10.2 million adults in the UK are digitally excluded, according to a House of Lords report. And independent research from one poll shows that local newspapers remain the public's primary source for accessing public notices, more than social media, council websites or search engines. As Owen Meredith, chief executive of the NMA, put it, pubs and local papers go hand in hand. They are both community hubs, fostering connection and acting as a glue that binds neighbourhoods together. These proposals threaten to damage that cohesion by making decisions around hospitality venues less transparent, and ultimately harming both pubs and local papers. Here in Hampshire, we know how important it is to stay informed about what's happening on our doorstep. The Hampshire Chronicle has been serving this community for centuries. We're not just reporting the news, we're safeguarding your right to know. I urge ministers to listen to the voices of local journalists and the communities we serve. Transparency matters, accountability matters, and local newspapers matter.
Belgium has two things this week. A blue plaque for author. The newly unveiled plaque for Ampfield-born Reverend Wilbert Audrey in Strood. The Hampshire-born creator of Thomas the Tank Engine is being honoured with a national blue plaque at his former home in Strood, or possibly Stroud. 80 years after his famous stories first rolled off the page. Historic England will unveil the plaque to Reverend Wilbert Audrey at 30 Rodborough Avenue on Friday, recognising the much-loved children's author whose tales of talking engines became a global phenomenon. His daughter, Victoria Chambers, will perform the unveiling along Historic England Chief Executive Duncan Wilson. Audrey was born in the small village of Ampfield in 1911 and was inspired by steam trains as a boy growing up near Box Tunnel in Wiltshire. Ordained as a vicar in 1936, he began inventing railway stories to cheer up his young son, Christopher, who was ill with measles during the Second World War. Audrey received an OBE the year before he died, and Mrs. Chambers said, "It's wonderful that my father's lifelong love of railways and storytelling has been recognised where he spent so many happy years." And there's a round plaque, and there's a sort of image at the top I can't see very well, but it seems to be mostly flowers and a bird, and either a fox or a dog, I'm not sure. And it says, "The Rev. W. Audrey, 1911 to 1997, creator of Thomas the Tank Engine books, lived and wrote at this rectory, 1946 to 1952. And the second one's nice too. It's about meeting the new okapi calf born at the zoo. Hampshire's most popular zoo has welcomed a new endangered okapi calf. Marwell Zoo has celebrated the new arrival last month and has announced it in time to celebrate World Okapi Day on Saturday. The rare youngster, born on September the 10th to proud mum Daphne, is the third okapi born at the zoo in as many years and the 18th in its history. Keepers say that the birth is another huge success for the European ex situ breeding programme, which helps protected animals often known as the forest giraffe. They're one of Africa's most elusive and threatened animals, and there's a picture of a mother okapi with a very little okapi lying down by her, and another one of the little okapi, a little bit older, He's got a very long nose and two big ears, and he appears to be wearing white striped socks because he's got striped legs. Oh, it might be a she. They don't tell me. Sorry.
And now we move on to letters to the editor.
Right, Dave Woods writes about Logistics Park. I'm writing in regard to articles in the Chronicle, September 25th and October the 9th, about a proposed logistics park at Popham near Mitchell Dever. Much of the report was given over to traffic concerns raised by the local communities, which is clearly of concern. With two public consultations now done, the team at West Farm Popham Limited have obviously not grasped the seriousness of the likely traffic issues created by this proposal, choosing to limit their responses to just the roundabout into and out of the business park onto the A33. The existing surrounding roads would simply not cope with the significant traffic increases of cars and trucks. Mr. Buckley states that traffic movements will not be at peak times, but nowhere have they attempted to detail the extra traffic movements. With an Amazon-sized development of warehouses, the extra traffic will be very significant indeed, as they apparently intend to route much of this traffic through the south up the A33 towards Basingstoke from Winchester. Are all the communities along that route, including Kingsworthy, Mitchell Dever, the Strattons, aware of this scheme? They should be, because with HGV movements up and down this road on a 24-hour basis, it will change the face of the environment all along this corridor. In a wider issue, the junction at Bullington Cross of the A34 and A303 would also not cope with this increase in heavy goods vehicle and other traffic, and will most likely be gridlocked during the day. On the main issue of the development itself, Mr. Buckley states that the development, is quite a low impact from a visual perspective. I would suggest that Mr. Buckley needs to go to Specsavers if he truly believes this statement. Attached is an image, my image, no copyright, of West Farm just before harvesting this year. This view would, under these proposals, be looking straight at an enormous warehouse and the wider business park, completely and utterly changing the landscape forever. West Farm sits on one of the highest points in Hampshire, nicknamed the Hampshire Highlands by the media. Thus, I would contend that the entire proposed development is of significant visual impact both to the local area and much further afield. On a clear day and at night with the lighting, it will be very visible from much of Hampshire. My view overall is that the whole scheme is grossly at odds with the environment in which it will be sat, destroying the valuable arable land. Whilst regional warehousing is probably needed, surely there are far more suitable brownland sites available for this enormous development. And that's Dave Woods, Popham, Mitchell Dever.
And a letter from Dr. Alexander Cully, who's the Reform UK County Organiser. Council finances. Conservative Hampshire County Council leader Nick Adams-King recently uploaded a video to YouTube attacking Reform UK and praising his own party's supposed financial acumen. In the video, Adams-King claimed that, here in Hampshire, your Conservative County Council is taking a smarter path. We've launched a comprehensive transformation programme to ensure we live within our means. This is despite Hampshire County Council having warned only a year ago that a Section 114 notice, de facto bankruptcy, was almost an inevitability. Speaking to the Financial Times in October 2024, Adams-King blamed central government for the council's financial plight, saying, "None of us want to be making these decisions. We find ourselves here because of the way local government finances is structured," before adding, "I hope this government might change that." Perhaps he has forgotten that it was his own Conservative colleagues who shifted greater financial risk onto local authorities through the Care Act in 2014 and Children and Families Act 2014, legislation that placed escalating unfunded obligations for social care and SEND squarely on councils like Hampshire. Now reports suggest his administration is lobbying hard for the government to approve a further delay to county elections, quoted in, from the GB News, October 17th. Adams King now denies this, but if true, it would be an extraordinary move from a leader who insists his council has its finances under control. If Adams King truly believed in his smarter path, he would be eager to face the electorate, not postpone their verdict. Are we living in Hampshire or Mugabe era Harare? Dr. Alexander Cully, Reform UK County Organiser, Hampshire and Isle of Wight, George Curlway in Southampton.
And N. Carter has a stamp appeal. I am appealing for used postage stamps, which help me raise funds which I then donate to the Guide Dogs for the Blind. Recycling used postage stamps is such an easy way to raise money for the charity, and I'm always in need of all types of postage stamps, including British, foreign and Christmas stamps. If you are able to help, I would be grateful if you could cut the stamps from their envelopes, leaving about 1 centimetre margin around the stamp, and send them to the address below, N. Carter, Guide Dog Stamps, P.O. Box 91, Virginia Water, Surrey.
Memories of a 1950s Mayor by Angela Fletcher, née Baker. On reading the Hampshire Chronicle dated August the 28th, I was delighted and so surprised to see a photo of Miss Evelyn Barnes being sworn in as Mayor in 1957. My memories of Miss Barnes are as head teacher of St Michael's School in Cannon Street and of her bringing her Sealyham dog to school. Also of the class going to her house to watch, again I believe, the state opening of Parliament. Such good memories of my time in her class and also of her caring attitude. I was asthmatic and because of her, she was concerned that I would become ill. She advised my parents that I shouldn't sit the 11 plus, so I stayed home that day. I was only at St Michael's for 3 years, from 1956 to 1959, but very happy ones. Thank you for the memory. Angela Fletcher, née Baker, Hamilton Road, Bishopstoke, Eastleigh. Picture of Miss Barnes being sworn in as mayor. It's an old news photo, so it's all black and white. Anyway.
And this is a letter from Chris Gillam, entitled Still Filthy Air. The City Council's revocation of its air quality management area for Winchester may accord with the regulations, but it seems very premature in the message it sends. Though pollutant levels in Winchester may fall below legal thresholds, they remain high compared with the recommendations of the World Health Organization, which are generally recognised, not least by Public Health England, as more realistic indicators of the health consequences of pollution. The streets of Winchester remain poisonous, with no obvious prospect of improvement. The average nitrogen dioxide level in St George's Street so far this year is 25.9 micrograms per cubic metre, which should be compared with the WHO threshold of danger at 10 micrograms per cubic metre. The average small particulate, the most dangerous pollutant concentration, is 16.4 micrograms to 3, compared with the WHO threshold of 5 micrograms dash 3. That threshold is not overcautious. Well-established research, PHE et al., points to significant consequences below this level, and 40,000 early deaths per year in the UK are associated with just this pollutant. The presumption of government and most local authorities has been that improvements in engine technology have been responsible for the decline in nitrogen dioxide, and that the move away from combustion engines will bring further improvements. There is no basis for such complacency. Particulate pollution is no longer dominated by tailpipe emissions, but by brake and especially by tyre and road surface wear. What is more, the chemical toxicity of such particles, and not just their size and ability to penetrate all parts of the human body, is of increasing concern. Small particulate pollution is not just from motor vehicles, but also from such things as wood-burning stoves. but there remains a clear correlation between traffic levels and particulate levels in St George's Street. It is this traffic element that is likely to increase unless the local authorities do something about it. It will increase because the move towards electric vehicles is a move towards heavier vehicles and greater friction emissions. Emission analytics reveals that EVs emit 1,850 times more particle pollution by friction than modern tailpipes equipped with exhaust filters. This is no time for the council to give up on action. Chris Gillam, Upper High Street in Winchester.
Jock MacDonald is writing as the chairman, more than 30 years ago, of the relevant Committee for Parking and Traffic in Winchester City Council, to say that he fully understands the frustration and resentment of people complaining about the present situation, reported in the Chronicle on October the 16th. A scheme that was devised to stop commuters freeloading on resident streets has now been turned into a cash cow for Hampshire County Council. What's more, the management of the scheme is based in Sheffield, and the local arm of it, scarcely comprehending what is happening, is difficult to get hold of. Cars and attitudes to traffic have changed much in 30 years. There's one big problem now. The advent of electric vehicles and the greater popularity of SUVs, both are larger than the average car at the beginning of the century and take up more room when they are parked. Cardiff has noticed this and, I believe, is going to charge less for ordinary cars and more for the bigger ones. Jock MacDonald, Stockbridge Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
And here's another letter titled Parking Row by Reuben Peckham. Your article relating to on-street parking enforcement in Winchester makes very believable reading, Chronicle, October 16th. What is more difficult to measure, however, is the absolutely shocking attitude and conduct of the enforcement officers employed by the third-party company undertaking this role. As someone who lives in a city centre street on a house with double yellow lines outside, I experience this firsthand on a frequent basis. Not only do the officers not know the relevant laws, for example, in a car, you have 5 minutes by law to offload a car and 20 minutes for a van. Their attitude towards their work and the residents and visitors of the city, with one or two exceptions, blatantly disrespectful, arrogant, and one of superiority. No one will deny that these individuals have a difficult job to do, but they require more training to learn how to engage effectively and courteously with the population that they serve. I have on several occasions made complaints to the Hampshire County Council regarding their conduct, and my latest complaint went unanswered. In my opinion, this is a situation that is well out of control and needs addressing sooner rather than later. By Reuben Peckham, Little Minster Street, Winchester.
A letter from E. Wright entitled Lib Dems Debt. A few days ago, I received a couple of flashy, full-colour flyers from Eastleigh Lib Dems. They told me they were pushing, protecting, campaigning, fighting, defending, working hard and getting results on my behalf. Although all I see are deteriorating services. What really takes the biscuit, however, is their assertion that Hampshire and Southampton are both close to bankruptcy. Talk about the pot calling the kettle black. Of 317 local authorities in England, Eastleigh is one of the most indebted in absolute and per capita terms, and the most indebted in Hampshire. Now, though, with local government reorganisation not far away, Eastleigh can dump its debt on the authorities it merges with, who all have a lot less debt. Then we are told that Eastleigh's council tax has been cut every year for 22 years in real terms. That is being economical with the truth. Many borough responsibilities have been passed down to parish councils, and these costs are now included in the parish tax. No doubt more responsibilities will be delegated to keep up the facade of no council tax rises. Additionally, costs for services have increased significantly, one example being green waste collection. Initially, there was no charge, but this year there is a fee of £60, double what it was 12 years ago. Inflation over that period was 42%. Eastleigh Lib Dems have been in power for more than the last 30 years. They are responsible. And that's by E. Wright, Alexandra Road, Charnas Ford in Eastleigh.
Robert Sanders, he's back on parking again. Re your leader, council must ditch a vicious attitude over the increased number of parking tickets. In your front page article in last week's Chronicle, you quote a Hampshire County Council official, who states parking enforcement is in place to help keep streets safe. Has that unnamed official read Hampshire County Council's local transport plan, LTP4? What's the strategy? The plan sets out current transport strategy, which aims to reduce car dependency and improve sustainability across the county, whatever that means. To do this, the strategy will implement policy to support town centre economics. Well, is that things like a free half an hour parking for local residents, recently abolished? Your leader calls for a system that promotes Winchester as a place to do business. I agree. And having hordes of traffic wardens chasing away potential customers is missing the brief. Robert Sanders, Whiteshute Lane, St Cross, Winchester.
And this letter from Mark Rowe is headed Mental Health. Most of my life I have battled with my mental and physical health. I'm blessed now to have friends who I call family, who support through highs and lows. People I can count on, as they are there for me as I am there for them. I've switched to Universal Credit and would like to thank everyone at the Winchester Job Centre and the Winchester City Council for all have been very supportive and helpful. Also, Winchester City Football Club, who are truly a football family, who are at home on Saturday, October 25th, at home to Brixham 3 p.m. kickoff, or on Tuesday the 26th at home to Bishop's Cleeve 7:45 p.m. kickoff, if you would like to come for the beautiful game at its best. Mark Rowe, Taplings Closed, Week, Winchester.
And that concludes the letters from the editor. For your information, lighting up time ends on Friday the 24th at 7:10 and begins at 18:30. On Wednesday the 29th, it ends at 06:15 and begins at 17:19. I'm sorry, I think there's an error there. Mm. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. This number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. Now we continue with further items of general news.
Imagination to turn trash into treasure. Turning trash into treasure has earned a group of creative minds top honours in a competition. An upcycling contest held in Bishop's Waltham as part of the Greening Campaign Showcase on October the 11th challenged participants to transform hard-to-cycle waste into practical and inspiring new items. Among the entries were a herb planter made from a forklift pallet and a working blacksmithing forge built from discarded metal table legs. In total, 70 people took part, including 4 adults, 6 under-18s and 3 group entries from Bishop's Waltham Beaver Troops. Ideas ranged from a coffee cup lid, repurposed as a slug barrier, to a London taxi engine cut, hinged and converted into a barbecue. The winning entry was the herb planter, fitted with a trickle irrigation system and using fruit punnets as plant pots. Danny Chambers, Winchester MP, who helped judge the competition, said, "Whenever we put something in the bin, we think we're throwing it away, but the reality is that it goes to landfill or is incinerated. This competition shows that with imagination and ingenuity, we can turn waste into a valuable resource. The competition aimed to divert as much non-recyclable waste from landfill and incineration as possible, while promoting ideas that could be easily replicated by other people. The winning under 18 entry was a working junior blacksmith forge constructed from metal table legs and an air cylinder with an airbed pump to aerate the charcoal and increase the temperature. Other practical ideas included a rag rug made from strips of a discarded duvet. The competition was organised by Sustainable Bishops Waltham, a community group working with the parish council to engage residents in environmental action. The Greening Campaign Showcase marked the end of a 12-month project focused on five pillars of environmental improvement, including waste reduction, organic food growing, nature conservation, home energy efficiency, and the health impacts of climate change. The upcycling competition was first launched at the group's Rethinking Rubbish event in March.
Green light to convert four-bedroom house of multiple occupation into a kids' zone. Winchester planners unanimously approved a plan to convert an estate home into a children's care facility. The property at Thurmond Crescent, Stanmore, will switch from a house of multiple occupancy, or HMO, into a home for the accommodation and care of children. The switch in the use classes from C4 to C2 means the house will be able to host three children aged between 9 and 17. Several neighbouring residents opposed the plans, however, submitting 12 objections. They cited several reasons, including concerns over antisocial behaviour, well-being, a loss of the residential character of the area, and increased noise. They also cited the impact the home would have on parking spaces and the fact that the home would increase car journeys to and from the property. Transition to a child care facility was put forward by applicant Ifeoma Ozeamina, and the application was handled by City Council case officer Ethan Townsend.
On the road, Grandfather John enjoys campervan trip. A grandfather's birthday wish came true when staff at his Hampshire Dementia Care Home arranged for him to go on a much-wanted road trip in a VW campervan. John Saltzman celebrated his 75th birthday in the fresh air of the New Forest after journeying from Colton's Care Winchester Home, St Catherine's View. Along with fellow passengers, his wife Veronica and the home's companionship team leader Laura Sheldrake, John was able to sit back and enjoy the ride to and from Whitefield Moor near Brockenhurst. Once there, he took in the countryside views and with the side door open had a picnic with Veronica as they sat together. He also took a short stroll through the heathland at a respectful distance from the New Forest donkeys. Laura decided to organise the day for him when Veronica explained it was a long-held dream of the couple to enjoy a campervan experience, but they had never got around to making it happen before.
Students' jungle trip to Borneo, life-changing. Sleeping in hammocks under the rainforest canopy, scuba diving in tropical waters, and spotting wild orangutans were just some of the experiences students enjoyed on an unforgettable residential trip. These were part of a four-week trip to Borneo for 22 students from HSDC's Alton, Havant and South Down campuses. The journey was a mix of community engagement, conservation work and cultural exploration. Martin Bell, course lead of Public and Defence Services, said, "One month in Borneo was a journey that rewrote our understanding of adventure. Among the lush primary forest, untamed wildlife and vibrant culture, 22 students discovered not just the beauty of the world, but also the depth of their own resilience. It was an experience that changed our lives, one breathtaking encounter at a time. My personal highlight was seeing a wild orangutan, scuba diving and playing sports with the locals." Each student raised funds to cover the cost of the trip, demonstrating personal commitment to its conservation and community skills. They visited the outskirts of the city Kota Kinabalu, where they explored the Sabah Art Museum and took part in an upcycling workshop, transforming discarded materials into pieces of artwork. They also contributed to a mangrove conservation project by planting saplings to support the preservation of these fragile tropical ecosystems. The rainforest leg of the journey took them to Camp Batupute, where they camped in hammocks amongst the dense foliage, planted more than 200 trees, and took a river cruises. A key goal was to spot Borneo's big five wildlife: the orangutan, pygmy elephant, the proboscis monkey, rhinoceros hornbill, and estuarine crocodile. While the students heard but did not see the pygmy elephant and missed the rhinoceros hornbill, they were able to observe wild orangutans, proboscis monkeys, and estuarine crocodiles in their natural habitat. They also spent time on Mamatukik Island, just off the coast of Borneo, where they learned to scuba dive and explored the vibrant marine life that included colourful fish, coral reefs, and turtles. The trip was an invaluable opportunity for the students to learn more about Borneo, biodiversity, community collaboration, and themselves.
Reward for tireless work. Three remarkable Hampshire residents have been recognised for their tireless community work in the first several Churchill Living Local Hero Awards. Rosemary Humpage from the Winchester was named Hampshire's Local Hero, while Tony Knight, also from Winchester, and Gerald Merritt from Basingstoke were both highly commended for their inspiring service to others. Rosemary, 86, has dedicated more than 15 years to Winchester bereavement support, helping people navigate grief and loss with compassion and care. The charity, which has supported almost 3,000 people over 43 years, relies entirely on volunteers like Rosemary, who is also an active committee member and regular event organiser. Her empathy and gentle presence have comforted countless people during their most difficult moments. Rosemary said she felt truly honoured to receive the award and the £1,000 donation that accompanies it. Winchester bereavement support means so much to me, and I'm proud to be part of a group of volunteers who give their time so selflessly. The donation will help us reach more people who are struggling with loss and need someone to listen. Among two highly commended recipients was Gerald Merritt, 86, from Basingstoke, whose decades of volunteering have touched countless lives. Gerald has raised funds for numerous charities, served as a football refugee, and mentor for over 60 years. He co-founded the Basingstoke and Dean Over 55s Forum, now with more than 500 members. He continues to organise day trips that provide companionship and connection for older residents, something many describe as a lifeline. Also recognised was Tony Knight, 79, from Winchester, a stalwart of Winchester Radio since 1978. He played a key role in transforming the service into a full Ofcom licence health and wellbeing station in 2019, and despite recent ill health, still broadcasts 5 hours a week.
Restaurant crowned one of the best in the UK. A Winchester restaurant has been crowned as one of the best in the country. Rim Jim Restaurant in City Road scooped Best Restaurant of the Year in the Curry Life Awards 2025. This win places Rim Jim, a staple in the Winchester dining scene for 27 years, among the top 20 curry houses in the UK. Owner Shokwat Ahmed said the win was a testament to the restaurant's blend of tradition and innovation in South Indian cuisine. He said, "We are truly honoured to be Curry Life Awards finalists. This recognition inspires us to keep innovating and delivering the best for our customers. I am deeply grateful to the organisers and our partners. This is a proud moment for the entire Rim Jim team, and we look forward to an exciting future together." He added, "I love reconnecting with customers, seeing familiar faces return and meeting new visitors from all over, even from the USA. It's what keeps every day exciting. The restaurant's win is down to its continual innovation, including introducing new dishes every 6 months. It is also known for its vibrant South Indian flavours in signature dishes and exceptional customer service in a spacious setting that accommodates up to 160 guests. The award was presented at the Curry Life Awards 2025 ceremony, held on October the 12th at the Marriott Grosvenor Square in Mayfair, London. The event was attended by the elite of the British curry industry. Politicians and media all gathered to celebrate excellence in the sector.
University of Winchester graduation 2025. Hard work pays off for students. Graduation season is in full swing and thousands of newly qualified graduates are celebrating years of hard work at Winchester Cathedral. On Tuesday, October the 21st, University of Winchester graduates from the Faculty of Business and Digital Technologies, as well as Law, Crime and Justice, began their celebrations with family and friends at Winchester Cathedral. Today is the first of four ceremony days, with graduations being held in the cathedral from 10 in the morning to 3:30 in the afternoon every day. Still to graduate are faculties from Health and Wellbeing, Humanities and Social Sciences, and Education and the Arts. Fashion marketing graduate Lauren Hill, aged 21 of Brighton, said, "It was really good and so nice to bring together the last 3 years. The best part of my course was the girls I met there. They're besties for life." Business management graduate Earl Nash Williams, aged 22 of Newbury, said, "I thought it was really good, and it's always exciting to see friends. I already have a job in project management, which I was offered in the summer, so I'm looking forward to the future." MSc marketing graduate and international student Mohammed Rahat, aged 30 of Bristol, said, "I am very proud. It is an unexplainable experience. I haven't attended this type of cathedral before, so it's a new experience, but a very good one. Now I'm looking for a job in the industry, though I already have something part-time." And fashion marketing graduate Lucy Voller, aged 21, said, "My favourite part of the course was writing my dissertation on sustainability in fashion, and that's the industry I want to go into. Now I just have to look at finding jobs."
Family-run Cafe Josie's, set for Seventh Heaven. A family-run and Hampshire-based coffee shop chain is set to expand. Josie's has announced that it is going to open a new cafe in Wickham's old tea house, although no guaranteed date has been set, other than early 2026. Anthony Latouf, director of food and beverage, said, "Every new Josie's feels like a milestone for us, but Wickham is particularly special because it's a place we've had our eye on for years. We still see ourselves as a small family-run group of coffee shops, so every new opening is special. It's about finding communities we feel we can be part of, and Wickham felt like the perfect fit. Customers can expect everything Josie's has become known for: speciality coffee, our famous all-day brunches, and those indulgent pancake stacks. But more than the menu, they can expect a buzzing, welcoming atmosphere and a space that feels part of Wickham. Whether you're grabbing a quick takeaway coffee or settling in for a long brunch with friends, we want people to feel right at home." The company made the announcement in a Facebook post on Wednesday, October the 15th. It has six cafes across Bishops, Waltham, Winchester, Petersfield, Romsey, Chandlersford and Alsford. Each is open 7 days a week for breakfast, lunch, cakes and, of course, delicious coffee, according to its website. It also said, "We believe that using quality, fresh ingredients is the secret to our great tasting coffee and food. All of our ingredients are sourced carefully, and wherever possible, we choose local suppliers."
Winning poet helps close festival. Celebrated poet Fiona Benson helped close the Winchester Poetry Festival, honouring both classic and modern works. The multi-award-winning poet led the finale at the Arc, welcoming the audience in a packed auditorium and introducing some of the commended poets, both in person and via video link, on Sunday the 12th of October. The festival, which ran from October the 2nd to October the 12th, had an overarching theme of revitalising the classics. The theme paid homage to literary giants like Jane Austen, John Keats and William Shakespeare. The classics were not the only focus. Contemporary poets also had their share of the limelight, entertaining an audience with a range of works that were both humorous and thought-provoking. The festival, under the artistic direction of Claire Pollard, was a medley of diverse events. The festival featured both online and in-person workshops over the weekend, with celebrated and emerging poets participating. The dynamic programme combined 24 performances, workshops, activities and readings. Thanks to support from Winchester City Council, 9 of these were free to attend. The competition attracted 2,284 entries this year, with 41 entries paid for by other poets or donors using a pay it forward scheme, allowing those on low incomes to participate. Although the top 3 winners were UK-based, there were entries from 34 countries, including Serbia, Singapore, Sweden and the States. The Catherine Bevis Prize Award to the strongest poem entered into the competition by a Hampshire-based poet was won by Christina Moran for Under Wonderland. All of the entries were read and judged blind by the Triple T.S. Eliot Prize shortlisted poet Fiona Benson, who presented the special prize-giving event as part of the festival programme.
Hundreds of Santas to run. Hundreds of Santas will hit the streets once again for a charity fun run. The annual Santa Fun Run, organised by Naomi House and Jack's Place, returns to Winchester on Sunday, December the 7th, raising vital funds for the hospices in Sutton Scotney, which support children and young adults with life-limiting conditions. A highlight of the festive season for more than 15 years, the event draws crowds of runners every year. Gemma Rolfe, events executive at Naomi House and Jack's Place, said, "We are truly grateful to everyone who supports this event year on year. It's our jolliest event and raises thousands to help us continue the amazing care and support we provide at Naomi House and Jack's Place. Whether you're thinking about joining us for the first time or are coming back for another year, we can't wait for you to enjoy this experience. This year brings a new route for the 5-kilometre run, which will start and finish outside Winchester Guildhall. Participants will follow a scenic route along the River Itchen and through the countryside. The run is open to all ages and abilities, including dogs. Every participant will receive a Santa keyring and a mince pie at the finish line."
And delving into Holmes's Holmesian mystery of a city's headless black swan, the Southern Daily Echo archivist Ian Crump looks at the history of Winchester's link with the crime-fighting detective Sherlock Holmes. It's a mystery worthy of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle himself, almost. While it lacks the macabre horror of The Hound of the Baskervilles, it holds a peculiar, more poignant kind of intrigue, the curious case of the headless bird. For more than a century, a life-size wooden black swan has presided over the streets of Winchester, casting its eye over the city while perched high on a wall. This isn't just any statue, it's a piece of local legend, a remnant of a bygone age. The swan was once the proud emblem of the Black Swan Hotel, a grand establishment that stood on the corner of the High Street and Southgate Street. The hotel itself was immortalised in literary history when Conan Doyle chose it as the setting for a pivotal meeting in his Sherlock Holmes story, The Copper Beeches. In its hallowed halls, Holmes and his ever-faithful companion, Dr. Watson, met Miss Hunter for a luncheon that set the stage for one of their most intriguing cases. The original hotel was a casualty of progress, demolished in 1935 to make way for a road widening scheme. But the swan, a symbol too precious to lose, found a new home on the facade of its replacement, the Black Swan Buildings, a modern mix of shops and flats. Over the years, the swan's existence has been punctuated by a series of misfortunes. In 1945, the figure fell to pieces, prompting a public outcry of support. A community-driven campaign raised £55 to have it replaced, and in 1949, local craftsman Edwin Laverty carved a new majestic swan. But its trials were not over. In 1992, the swan suffered another indignity when its head mysteriously fell off, requiring a £700 repair. Then, in 2006, the swan once again lost its head, likely by persons unknown. This act of vandalism prompted a new kind of investigation, not by the great detective, but by a passionate local. Bonnie Balcom, Mr. Laverty's granddaughter, went on a mission to undercover who was responsible for the swan's repair. "It's a piece of Winchester heritage and it should be repaired," she said at the time, her voice filled with conviction. "I can't believe it has been left like that." But the plot thickens. Like a true Holmesian puzzle, the question of responsibility became a bureaucratic tangle. As it turns out, no one seemed willing to claim ownership of this feathered piece of literary greatness. Tony Langridge, the chief of state officer at the City Council, explained that while the council owns the building, it's leased to the Atlantic Housing Association. Both entities have disavowed responsibility for the swan's upkeep. "Atlantic is responsible for the upper part," Langridge explained, expressing his own surprise at their stance. "I would have thought they would have taken a different view. I'll take it up with them." Then, in the latest twist in this ongoing saga, the swan was removed in February 2012 and taken to First Wessex Property Services in Portsmouth, where it became apparent that the carving was irreparable. A local craftsman used the carving to produce a replica swan, which was unveiled in May of the same year.
Home Oak gets a TPO. Civic chiefs have granted a preservation order for a home oak in Bishop's Waltham. Winchester City Council confirmed the order despite two objections following an initial refusal of a removal application. The tree was assessed by a council tree consultant and deemed to warrant protection, scoring 19 points on the tree evaluation method for preservation orders. Objections were received arguing that the tree blocked sunlight, posed a danger due to swaying in high winds, created unsanitary conditions and caused damage to boundary walls. Councillor Jonathan Williams said, "This tree is on a prominent walk into the centre of Bishop's Waltham High Street. It's very visible from the pavement as you're walking in. This does not preclude anyone doing any works to the tree at all. It just protects it and protects the work around that. So I would be supporting the recommendation to confirm the TPO." One objector also stated the tree was not protected at the time of the council's refusal of removal. The tree officer responded, stating there is no legal entitlement to light in the UK from trees, and no evidence from an appropriate expert was provided to suggest the tree posed a safety risk. He also noted that the tree contributes to the character of the conservation area and stated that the tree was protected on the date of the refusal.
It's brilliant. Nothing but praise for Westgate. Winchester residents have praised a city centre pub as it relaunches following a refurbishment. The Westgate in Romsey Road held the party on Saturday, October the 18th, inviting members of the public to see the newly refurbished building and try its new menu. The pub was packed with people during the reopening, with dozens exploring the place and enjoying the reopening. Alex Zambrano and Richard Speroni were among the customers enjoying the pub. Alex said, "We have a flat around the corner. We live in Winchester. I came across the pub when I had to book some rooms for a work do. It is our first time at this pub and it's very nice. We got here fairly early to grab a seat. The music's really good." John and Dee Hearn were also enjoying the Westgate. John said, "It's a very nice local pub. The landlord's great and the staff are very nice. This is a listed building, so it took a lot to refurbish it. They've done it fantastically. It will be great for the area around Westgate." Fred Mitchell said he liked the pub's atmosphere. "I only live two doors up the road. It's my local. It's a great local pub that creates an atmosphere that's beneficial to the local community, and hopefully local government will back the existence of such establishments." And there's a picture of two guys, quite young, with guitars, They must be the music that was very good. They're called the Henrys. And there's also a view of lots and lots of people sitting happily at tables, clearly enjoying the opening of the pub.
Blue Peter legend to play Charles Dickens. Legendary broadcaster Peter Purvis is set to play Charles Dickens in a radio play adaptation of A Christmas Carol. The former Blue Peter presenter will perform alongside Doctor Who actors Colin Baker and Tom Baker at Theatre Royal Winchester on November the 16th. Peter, 86, will take on the role of the author of the much-loved Victorian tale, while Colin will play Ebenezer Scrooge and Tom will appear as Jacob Marley. Martin Parsons, who adapted the novella and directs the show, said, "On Christmas Eve, Ebenezer Scrooge is warned by the ghost of his late partner, Jacob Marley, that he will be visited by three spirits, Christmas past, Christmas present, and Christmas yet to come. Together they whisk Scrooge to the past and happy boyhood, Christmas times to the present, to meet Tiny Tim at Bob Cratchit's Christmas feast, and finally to the future and Scrooge's own miserable grave, all attempting to show him the error of his ways. But will Scrooge wake on Christmas morning a changed man?" The show is set to take place at 7:30 p.m. on November 16th. Tickets are available to purchase from the theatre's website.
No Christmas visit for Charity Shop. A much-loved seasonal charity shop will not be returning to the city this Christmas. After nearly 30 years in Winchester, the Cards for Good Causes pop-up shop will be absent for the 2025 festive period. The organisation has been unable to secure a venue for its Winchester outlet, which has been part of the city's Christmas tradition since 1996. Christine Ansell, CEO of Cards for Good Causes, said, "Christmas is a time for giving, and our volunteers and staff make that possible every day. Through Cards for Good Causes, each purchase helps support charities and community projects that bring hope and connection to so many. The charity is appealing to the community for help in finding a location for 2026, particularly from businesses, property owners, or organisations with a suitable space. The nearest alternative shops will be in Alton, Eastleigh, Chalmersford, Romsey, Petersfield and Marlborough. Cards for Good Causes have been raising funds through the sale of Christmas cards since 1959, supporting more than 100 national and local charities. In the past decade alone, the organisation has raised more than £22 million. Last year, the shop was located in the Brook Shopping Centre. However, this unit has now been let.
Cow stuck in mud gets rescued by specialist firemen. Specialist fire crews had to rescue a cow from mud in Winchester after it found that the grass was not greener on the other side. There's a picture of three firemen on a sort of, it looks like a makeshift bridge, like a sort of emergency bridge or something they brought in. That it's over the river and the cow's head and shoulders are sticking up out of the river, so it's a lot more than just mud. But clearly he couldn't get out because of being stuck. Yeah. The cow got stuck at River Park when it tried to cross the River Itchen early in the morning on Tuesday, October the 14th. Nine firefighters entered the water to help release the cow from the mud before lifting and removing the animal to safety. They've spelt removing the animal to safety and into a nearby field using a specialist winch.
Gerald wins Young Farmer of the Year 2025. A 21-year-old from Stockbridge has been crowned Young Farmer of the Year at an awards ceremony. Matt Hancocks, who lives in Longstock, became the Farmers Weekly Awards 2025 Young Farmer of the Year on Thursday, October the 2nd, at the Grosvenor House Hotel in Park Lane. His business, M. Hancock's Livestock, began with a dozen chickens and a few lambs when he was 14. Mr. Hancock's is also a relief herdsman and contract shepherd, using his income to invest in his livestock. Mr. Hancock said, "Agriculture is my passion. And I think it's really important that people are informed about where their food comes from." The judges said, "Matt truly encompasses what it means to be a young farmer and is a great representative of the industry. He's built his business through sheer determination and a will to succeed.
Men's sheds gather to exchange ideas. Men's sheds from across Hampshire gather to meet the organisation's CEO and exchange ideas. Caroline Ellis, CEO of UK Men's Sheds, visited Nursling Men's Shed for a Hampshire-wide meeting on Monday the 13th of October. The event, sponsored by Wessex Insurance, saw participation from sheds in Andover, Bitton, Fareham, Church Crookham, Colden Common, Hayling Island, Romsey, Shirley and Wellow. Also in attendance were members from Nursling's ladies section. The gathering was an opportunity for the groups to exchange ideas. Caroline, the recently appointed CEO of UK Men's Sheds, alongside Chair of Trustees Rob Lloyd, attended the event. Addressing the attendees in the neighbouring St Boniface Church, Caroline underscored the role of the UK Men's Shed Association in backing individual sheds and raising awareness on a national scale.
Students learn CPR. A regional campaign provided emergency resuscitation education to thousands of students, helping them develop the skills. South Central Ambulance Service, NHS Foundation Trust, SCAS, took part in this year's Restart a Heart Day on Wednesday, October the 15th, with the goal of training more than 10,000 students across Berkshire, Buckingham, Hampshire and Oxfordshire in CPR and defibrillator use. David Hamer, paramedic and operations manager at SCAS, said, "Restart a Heart Day is one of the most important dates in our calendar because it's about giving thousands of young people the skills and the confidence to save a life. We're incredibly grateful to our community first responders, co-responders and SCS staff who are volunteering their time to visit schools across our region. Without their commitment, this huge training effort would not be possible. Nearly 100 schools across the region were visited by SCAS staff, community first responders and co-responders. Around 30,000 people experience an out-of-hospital cardiac arrest each year in the UK, and fewer than 1 in 10 survive. Each minute without CPR or defibrillation reduces survival chances by 10%. So Restart a Heart Day is a global initiative led by the Resuscitation Council, British Heart Foundation, St John Ambulance, British Red Cross and United Kingdom Ambulance Services.
Tributes paid as Rotary Club president steps down. A Rotary Club in Hampshire has paid tribute to its outgoing president. Chris Edwards, president of the Rotary Club of Fareham, Meon, stepped down after a year of service with a farewell contribute celebration held in Soberton in her honour. Is that Soberton or Soberton? Anyway. Ms. Edwards said, "When I became president, I set out my plans to increase our membership and, in particular, recruit a corporate member. That we achieved these goals is extremely gratifying." During her presidency, the club welcomed its first corporate member, Rebecca Kearney, from the Cam's Mill Pub and Restaurant in Fareham. She also welcomed David Fawcett, who brings more than 40 years of corporate experience with a focus on social value. Mr. Fawcett will become president in summer 2026. Ms. Edwards placed a strong emphasis on youth engagement and education during her term. She said, "It's important that Rotary reach out to young people. I'm very proud that we have worked with a range of local schools which sit at the heart of our community and collaborated on a number of activities, especially those that help build self-confidence and develop key skills, such as public speaking." Incoming President Paul Jones praised her leadership. He said, "Chris may be small in stature, but she has shown great leadership skills which have helped steer the club so ably through the last 12 months. She is a very hard act to follow. If I can partly match her achievements, I'll be extremely happy."
Bereavement charity expands. A bereavement charity has launched vital support services for families in need. Charity To Wish, which is spelt with a number two, Wish, which supports families after the sudden death of a child or young adult, has expanded its services to Hampshire and several neighbouring counties. Rhianne Mannings, MBE founder of Tuish, said, "We are proud to be able to extend our support to more local communities in England. We've seen the significant differences that we're making to families who lose a child or young adult under certain circumstances, and we have been spending time building relationships in the hospitals and police forces of more counties, which has been a key step."
Volunteers roll up their sleeves to help at Green Space, and there's a picture of a little row of six people all in high-vis jackets with big smiles. A group of volunteers has rolled up their sleeves to give a green space a boost. Staff from Savills Estate Agents teamed up with the Friends of St Giles Hill Park for hands-on conservation work. The team included Rob Tottle, Associate Director at Savills Residential Sales, along with colleagues Carmen Lever, Emily Medland, Hayley Prescott and James Waddington from Lettings, Sales and the Rural and Farming Department. Mr Tottle said, "It was fantastic to be at St Giles Hill Park on such a beautiful morning, and seeing what had been done by the teams before us acted as motivation to really get stuck in. We can't wait to continue the good work and see the park flourish." Donning orange Friends of St Giles Hill Park high-vis jackets, the volunteers supported ongoing efforts to improve biodiversity on the hill, including caring for native trees, bluebells and cowslips.
This looks like a fun evening. Beetle Drive in Village Hall. A beetle drive will be held in Bishop Sutton Village Hall near Alsford on Thursday, October the 30th at 2:30 p.m. A beetle drive is a fast-paced dice and drawing game with no skill required. It's a simple, fun game to play, says organiser and Homestart trustee Chrissy Barlow. Beetle drives used to be familiar sights in halls up and down the land once upon a time, so he thought, as a family support charity, why not bring back this quintessentially family game? Entry is just £2 per person, and places can be booked with Chrissy on 07976 686 979. I'll say that again, 07976 686 979, or email Chrissy.Barlow@homestartwinchester.org.uk. Shall I say that again too? Chrissy.Barlow@homestartwinchester.org.uk. Light refreshments will be available.
Britain's much-loved garden visitor is facing real danger. As October brings misty mornings and crisp evenings, one of our most familiar garden visitors, the European hedgehog, is preparing for its long winter sleep. These round brown mammals, famously covered in around 7,000 yellow-tipped spines, are a much-loved feature of Britain's wildlife and an important part of our natural heritage. Often called the gardener's best friend, hedgehogs are expert nocturnal foragers. They emerge at dusk to snuffle through long grass, flower beds, leaf litter and vegetable patches in search of worms, beetles, slugs and other invertebrates, making them natural pest controllers. Hedgehogs have a keen sense of smell and a remarkable ability to remember the location of abundant food sources. Mostly active from April to October, they thrive in a variety of habitats, including woodland edges, farmland, parks and suburban gardens, wherever shelter and food are plentiful. Solitary creatures for most of the year, they roam several kilometres each night in search of food and mates, coming together only during the breeding season in late spring and early summer. By this time of year, hedgehogs are busy feeding as much as possible to build up fat reserves before hibernation begins. As temperatures drop in November, they retreat to sheltered spots such as under sheds, log piles or dense shrubs, creating a nest of leaves and twigs known as hibernaculum. Inside, their heartbeat slows dramatically and their body temperature drops, allowing them to survive for months without food. Sadly, the familiar hedgehog is now facing real challenges. Once a common sight in gardens across the UK, numbers have declined sharply over recent decades. Habitat loss, pesticide use and busy roads have all taken their toll, leaving hedgehogs struggling to find safe places to feed and hibernate. Fortunately, small actions at home can make a big difference. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust recommends leaving areas of long grass, creating safe corridors between gardens, and avoiding harmful chemicals. All help provide the refuge hedgehogs need. Every connected green space can become part of a larger, life-saving network for this cherished species. With a bit of care and community effort, we can help ensure hedgehogs remain a welcome part of our gardens for generations to come.
109,000 people get the COVID jab this autumn. More than 109,000 people have received the COVID-19 vaccine so far this autumn. The vaccinations were recorded across Hampshire and the Isle of Wight since the campaign began on Wednesday, October the 1st. Dr. Michelle Legg, clinical lead for the NHS Hampshire and the Isle of Wight vaccination programme, said, "It's fantastic to see such a great response from our local community coming forward to have their vaccinations. One of the best ways to help protect yourself from becoming seriously unwell." This year's autumn COVID-19 vaccination programme runs until January the 31st, 2026. Those eligible include adults aged 75 and over, care home residents, and people aged 6 months and over who are immunosuppressed. There are also appointments available for flu vaccinations, with 2- and 3-year-olds now being able to receive their flu jab at pharmacies for the first time. Neil Hardy, chief pharmacist at NHS Hampshire and Isle of Wight, thanked the pharmacy teams for their efforts.
And that concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors for selecting the extracts this week and to the copying and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks to our readers. Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Bye.
Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Hilary Parsons.
Goodbye.
And from me, Steve Russell, goodbye, and do have an enjoyable week. When you've finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.